Was there an Adam? Was there an Eve? Or did we evolve from what we conceived? Either way, we got what we needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.
So we went digging into the ground and started to burn many things we found.
Yes, we did. We went digging into the ground and started to burn many things we found. This is Harvey Wasserman. We're back for another Soulotopia Green Power and Wellness Show, a full hour. We have the great Bob Petrakis with us. Bob, my co-conspirator from Columbus, Ohio, here for 20 years on revealing election theft. Bob, are you with us? Bob Petrakis, are you there? And hello? Bob Petrakis, are you there? Matt, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here, Harvey. Frank's on the line.
Okay, let's start with Frank. Frank, we're going to talk to you. Frank, you are in Arizona from the Democratic Party.
Exactly.
Is that correct? Give us your full name.
Frank Camacho.
Frank Camacho, can you tell us, Frank, where this show is going to be on election protection.
Right.
And we've done a long series on election protection, electronic vote theft, warning people about the theft of the 2012 election, and hopefully we'll do better by the time we get to 2016. Now, in Arizona, there's a major challenge to the election there. Can you tell us about that, please?
Well,
provisional ballots and all.
Yeah, it has to do with provisional ballots and the fact that we are trying to make sure that all the votes are correctly counted and tallied. And to this point, there still is approximately more than 100,000 provisionals that still need to be counted. We anticipate that they'll be counted by, they'll be finished counting all these votes by Wednesday. There are, the number of races that are still need to be called is dwindling quite a bit. Most of the major races have already been called, but there's some legislative races and one proposition in particular that are still out. So,
can you tell us about that? What's the proposition that's still out?
The proposition has to do with how the state is doling out, I believe, some of the federal dollars from the sale of land, of state land, to go to the education.
Highly controversial, no doubt. So tell us what happened here. At the end of the election, the regular election, November, what was it, 6th this year.
Right.
The networks and all the experts declared the Republican candidate for U.S. Senate the victor. But there were still, 500,000 or 600,000 provisional ballots that had not yet been officially tallied.
Right.
So what has been happening since then? I want to say that for once, the Democratic Party has stood up and refused to concede. And we actually had Harry Reid, the Senate Majority Leader, the senator from Nevada, stand up and say that he did not think the Democratic Party should concede this election until there was a full accounting of the provisional ballot. So tell us, please, what happened in Arizona, Frank.
Well, basically how this thing all came about is that we were too successful in getting folks registered for the permanent early voting list.
Okay, so you mean that facetiously, obviously, the Democratic Party was too successful in getting Hispanics, African-Americans, and other suspected Democrats coming out to vote, and the Republican Party didn't like it. And, of course, Arizona has a very right-wing Republican governor, Jan Brewer, and I assume the Secretary of State has similar politics. Is that correct?
Yeah, Ken Bennett, he's not quite as far to the right as Jan Brewer, but he's close.
Okay, so that put you, the Democratic Party, in a situation of wondering about these 500,000 provisional ballots.
Well, and the question is, why weren't you prepared for this? Because for instance, the Maricopa County Recorder, the one who is in charge of elections in the greater Phoenix area, is a strong advocate of voting early and voting by mail. And she knew quite well that both Republican and Democratic parties were trying to get folks put on the early voting list and trying to get them to vote by mail. We could tell by the number of people that we've signed up that it was going to be quite heavy. And we knew a couple of days before the election that not everyone had, that there was a significant batch of large percentage of early voters who had not turned in their ballots. So you could anticipate that they were going to come in on election day. And what happened is that they did. And there were some clerical mistakes made, apparently, where some of these early voters were not on the rolls as early voters, or that there was some indication that ballots had been sent out to them, but these folks were saying no, that the ballots were not sent out to them, and they were then forced to vote provisional. And that's exactly what has happened. We've had 600,000 of these provisional ballots, which they were not prepared to handle. They ran out of provisional ballots at some polling places. So they've had to scramble to make sure that everybody is voting. And what we have been doing since probably 2 days before Election Day is making sure that everyone who wanted to vote has the opportunity to vote, and we want to make sure that their vote is being counted, and that's what we're still doing right now.
Amazing. Let me intervene here. Bob Petrakis, are you on the line?
I am.
Bob?
Yes.
So have you been listening to Frank here from Arizona talking about provisional balloting in Arizona?
Yeah, for the last couple minutes, yeah.
Okay, so Frank, I'm on with Bob Petrakis. He is my co-author and co-conspirator on, we've been running since 2003, actually, mm-hmm. from Ohio, on stolen elections. Now, Bob has done a pretty thorough job of tracking what's going on with provisional balloting here. And for your information, Frank, after the 2004 election, at least 90,000 so-called spoiled provisional and other ballots were never counted in an election that was allegedly decided by 118,000 votes or thereabout.
Mm-hmm.
So, Bob, do you want to fill Frank in a little more here, and of course our listeners, on what has happened with provisional ballots here in Ohio? Because this is, I think, important information for you, Frank, and for our listeners. The Republican Party here in Ohio, which also, as in Arizona, controls the governor's mansion and the Secretary of State's office, no great friends to democracy, either one of these guys, has done some real shenanigans with the provisional ballots here. So, Bob, you're the reigning expert on this one. Can you fill Frank in and our listeners on the situation of provisional ballots here in 2012?
Well, in Ohio, you've got about 210,000 provisional, and this pattern has gone back to 2004 and 2008. The problem is they're disproportionately in urban areas and, again, African-American areas, poor neighborhoods. But part of it is, for some reason, they put a lot of the new voters, the ones that were registered, who often tended to be disproportionately poor and in urban areas where they're the big voter registration drives, on an addendum. They never got them worked into, in Franklin County, where Columbus is, into the actual poll book. And this didn't train the poll workers to check the addendum. So people were being forced, particularly in the urban areas, to vote provisionals when, in fact, they had their voter registration card with them, their forms with them, and their ID, because no one trained the poll workers to check the addendum. And also the search tools they had, they didn't use the last four digits of the Social Security code, which is the universal identifier. Also, again, in more affluent areas that are overwhelmingly white, people weren't question as they were in the inner city. So it really tended to target voters in the urban areas, black voters in particular. And even more interesting, Harvey, is that the Secretary of State's office sent out directives telling essentially the poll workers not to assist in any way, so that way they couldn't be sued for giving out bad information.
We love that. We love that. We're joined, I believe, by Victoria Collier. Victoria, are you on the line? Victoria Collier, are you on the line here? All right, well, we'll see. She's having trouble with her phone. Victoria is the author of a piece that appeared on the front page, front cover of Harper's Magazine recently about electronic vote theft. So, Frank, in Arizona, does all this sound familiar to you?
Yeah, it does. That's precisely what happened here in many of our areas, where there was a high provisional vote tally, and that was because folks weren't on the rolls. There were some questions as to the proper identification that they needed to show, and quite frankly, it appears that in some cases, poll workers were not giving the proper alternatives to voters, much like what your colleague just described as well.
All right. So now, this being the United States, of course, in a pure sanctified democracy, I know this could never happen, but do you believe in Arizona, and Bob, I'll ask you the same question in a minute, do you believe in Arizona that there was any partisan interest that was put into play here by the Republican governor and secretary of state that might have been aimed at discouraging potential Democrats from voting and doing this shall we say, dodge with the provisional ballots?
I've known both of the politicians for more than 20 years, and I don't think that they would be capable of doing that. Having said that, however, there are so many questions and so many coincidences that have occurred on November 6th that would lead a reasonable person to believe that, hey, what's going on here? And that's exactly what we want to find out. There have already been calls, and we fully expect that there'll be some kind of investigation over the way that the election was handled as soon as the votes have all been counted. That's what we have been calling for consistently, is let's count the votes. And then after they're counted, and we've made sure that everybody's vote does in fact count, let's find out what the heck happened here.
Well, what kind of investigation are you calling for? State, federal?
State. At this point, there have been calls by the Democratic leader in the Arizona House of Representatives that special investigation be launched by the House into the election as soon as the legislature comes back into session.
Well, Bob Fitrakis, you are the plaintiff in the now landmark Fitrakis versus Husted lawsuit here, having to do with a piece of software, which we'll get to in a bit. But having observed in El Salvador, Ohio, and other third world countries, the handling of provisional ballots, do you think that in Ohio there was a partisan interest expressed through the handling of provisional ballots here?
Well, yeah, of course there was. It's Ohio, and there was a much cleaner election in El Salvador after the Civil War.
How about Arizona? Do you put Arizona in the middle between Ohio and El Salvador? What do you think?
I don't know. Ohio even looks funny in terms of numbers by Ohio standards. But, we filed the King Lincoln Brunsville suit in 2006, really based on demographics. In the county of Lucas, for example, the four most heavily African-American wards provided 40% of all the provisional ballots in that county. Here in Franklin County, 4% of all the voters were forced to vote provisionally. And in Cuyahoga County, 3%. Now, part of the problem in this state, I mean, a lot of the people people have resigned over this in Cuyahoga County after the 2004 election. Diebold is the one who is handling their electronic poll, which is now defunct because of its bad reputation. I mean, they accidentally glitched 10,000 voters who then showed up and were forced to vote provisionally, were never counted. In this state, Triad, for the majority of counties, Triad, one of the state's leading right-to-life companies, it's owned by the Rapp family, they're hardcore right-to-life partisans, is in charge of these electronic poll books that never seem to work in heavily Democratic wards. So, you know, I've never thought it was a coincidence, but let me refer to the federal judge, Algernon Marbley, an African-American judge, but he actually referred to the actions repeatedly in his finding against the Secretary of State's office that they were engaged in illegalities. So when you hire partisan companies that are don't want the Democrats to win, and then there's massive malfunctions only in the heavily Democratic wards, to me that's election tampering. And when a federal judge, again, with a very judicial cautious temper, repeatedly tells the Secretary of State what you're doing is illegal and you shouldn't benefit from it, then you know, of course, that it was partisan. But, you know, that goes back to the 2004 election as well. That was first established by J. Kenneth Blackwell, who was co-chair of the Bush-Cheney reelection campaign. And everything he did was partisan, including throwing out the new registrations because they weren't on the 80 bond paperweight instead of 20.
Frank in Arizona, I'm sorry, Frank, what is your last name?
Camacho.
Camacho. Frank, did you, in addition to the provisional ballots and the, you know, the storm that's uprisen here, and essentially what's happened, and correct me if I'm wrong, is that you wound up with between 500,000 and 600,000 provisional ballots, and there was quite a bit of, I guess, friction, anger, controversy on Election Day about who was being forced to vote provisionally, and you said at one point on this show earlier on that they ran out of provisional ballots.
Yeah, in some precincts they did, yes.
Well, what did people do? How did they vote without provisional ballots?
They had to bring some. They had to keep the polls open and get some ballots from the main office down to that to those particular precincts.
Well, how long did that take?
Probably about an hour or two.
Do you have reports of people who left without voting?
There have been some indications. Some organizations have made that claim.
What were the laws? I'm sorry to be grilling you here, but you know, we in Ohio were kind of provincial. How long were the longest lines in Arizona on Election Day?
There were some, you know, lines. I would say probably about 200, 300, 400 people waiting in line.
So how many hours? How many hours do people have to wait to vote?
Usually, let me give you an example of a couple of precincts that were the polls closed here at 7, and people were still voting a little bit right around 8 o'clock for almost an hour after because of the lines.
Say that again.
The polls here, I was using this as an example, that the polls close here at 7. And,
uh-huh.
But the rules obviously state that if you're in line, they have to, you will get your opportunity to vote, even if you have not voted before 7 o'clock, okay?
Yeah.
So they, there were some reports that people were still voting close to 8 o'clock.
Oh, only eight o'clock.
Well, which means they were in line before 7, and mm-hmm. they could have been in line a half an hour waiting.
So, Bob, this year in Ohio, what's the latest poll operation that you know of?
Well, the longest wait that was reported that we were able to document was 3 hours, and that was OSU.
Ohio State University, up on campus in Columbus.
Yeah, just an absolute disaster. And the Board of Election admitted they didn't have enough poll workers for the voting turnout. But you had, you know, 2-3 hours at a few places in Cleveland. The long, long waits, which were really generated by what I believe is partisan politics, were in the early voting, where, you know, up in Cleveland, people had to wait for 5 hours. Although early voting was a better choice, because early voting, you didn't need identification. All you needed was the last 4 digits of your Social Security number. If you waited and voted on Election Day in Driving Park in the inner city of Columbus, the other problem is poll workers, in order to speed up and people that were being forced to vote provisionally, were directing them to any precincts, which means a lot of those votes won't be counted, usually about 20%, because the poll worker sent them to the wrong precinct table.
Did you have any instances like this in Arizona, Frank, where the voters were sent to the wrong precincts and therefore their provisional ballots would be disqualified?
Yes. Again, some reports of that occurring from some of the other groups, primarily Latino groups here in Arizona.
Well, so you used the term, of course, you know, in Ohio, this was done primarily to African Americans. We do have some substantial Hispanic enclaves around Toledo and other parts of the state,
mm-hmm.
You in Arizona, of course, have far more. Was there a disproportionate amount of problems in the precincts in Arizona that were populated by Hispanics as opposed to the rest of the population?
We understand there were, and I'm sorry that I sound so vague on these things, is because we still haven't gotten data from the Secretary of State and from the county recorders as to where the precincts, where the provisional votes were coming from. We still haven't gotten that information yet. And most of the information that we've had so far has been anecdotal. So until we get some firm data, it's very difficult to say exactly. We can't say exactly this is where this happened, this is where that happened. So it's just anecdotal at this point. But, yes, it would appear that based on what we have observed and based of what we've heard from voters in various areas, that most of the a majority of the precincts where there were a lot of provisionals came from mostly Hispanic districts.
Now, Bob, you went to court here in Ohio. This is Bob Patrakis, publisher of the FreePress.org website, and Frank Camacho with the Democratic Party in Arizona. We're talking about election irregularities in Ohio and in Arizona. That's our first sort of multi-state comparison here. Bob, we had an incident in Ohio in front of a local judge. As a federal judge, actually, Algernon Marbley, who you mentioned, who took great issue with how provisional voters were handled here. Can you talk to us a bit about what happened there?
Well, actually, it was Judge Frost, who's a Bush appointee, and really the judge. We had a 37-year NSA agent, Michael,
I want to talk about that. Bob, you're going into the electronic vote theft. I wanted to talk with Frank on the line quickly about the challenge that the federal judge, Algernon Marbley, raised to procedures involving the provisional balloting here. That was a separate case. Do you remember that one?
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct. Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
So did you want to talk to Frank?
If you'll tell Frank and our listeners this was not the Fitrakis versus Houston case, but the other case that came in front of Judge Marbley, the federal judge, when he talked about with great anger about what had been done to people who showed up and were given provisional ballots here in Ohio.
Well, his assertion, like if it's poll workers' error, you have to count the ballots and make every effort. If the poll workers, first of all, they shouldn't have voted. Many of these people were properly registered, shouldn't have voted provisionally. It was the poll workers who failed to check the addendum of the last-minute lawful registrations. So essentially the Secretary of State's office, which has fought long and hard to say, well, if they're voting provisionally or they're at the wrong precinct, their votes shouldn't count. The judge is insisting that those directives should not be legal because they benefit the Secretary of State's party, and it really was bad poll worker training. Hence, if you can prove that these people were properly registered, even though they voted in the wrong precinct, there's nothing to vote on in a precinct. They were at the right polling location. They were directed incorrectly as lawful voters to vote provisionally and sent to the wrong precinct.
Huh.
So the judge has said that, you know, quote, democracy, you know, will die in the dark, is that if you allow these types of activity, people are being cheated out of their votes. You got to count their votes.
Well, so, Frank, you know, we here in Ohio, unfortunately, led by Bob and some others, Bob Fitrakis here just spoke to you, have had long and ugly experience with the kinds of things that you're trying to sort out in Arizona.
Mm-hmm.
And when I read and we read about the fact that you actually have a U.S. Senate seat that's hanging in the balance here as a result of provisional ballots. As I recall, initially it appeared there was something like a 50,000 vote advantage for the Republican with 600,000 provisional ballots outstanding. Is that correct?
No, that's not
okay.
Correct.
Okay, tell
yeah,
us,
he,
please.
He had a Jeff Flake, the Republican, had, I'm trying to recall, I think at his peak, he had something like 90 to 100,000 vote advantage over Dr. Richard Carmona. That advantage has gone down, has been cut to 72,000. It held for about 5 days at about 80,000.
We have some serious background noise
right here.
I don't know where it's coming from, but Frank, can you stay with us for a few minutes after the break?
Sure.
So we can get to the bottom of this comparison here between Arizona and Ohio. Do you have any other states where this kind of provisional ballot problem has turned up?
No, not that I know of.
Bob, have we heard of others here in Ohio?
I don't know of any specific states, but historically, you know, it's often been the battleground states.
Yeah. All right, so Bob Fitrakis, if you don't mind, I want to stay with you after the break to get to there's been some interesting new Internet traffic on the election, electronic election theft. It will come back. Frank, if you can stay with us, that will be great.
Sure.
From Arizona, just a short break here. Data Lion seeing the Solartopia sign. This is the Solartopia Green Power Wellness Show with Harvey Washman, joined by Bob Fitrakis and Frank Sponcho from Arizona. We'll be right back.
Oil refineries, pipelines, mega dams, Iran, Iraq, Russia, Nigeria, Venezuela, Kurdistan. Oil spill, meltdown, flooding, suburbia, mudslide, traffic jam. Road rage, asthma, famine, leukemia, it's time to get a better plan. Solartopia is home sweet home to me.
Yes, indeed. Solartopia, green-powered energy. We'll be back for another segment here, another half hour with Bob Fitrakis, perhaps the nation's leading expert on electronic vote theft, principal litigant in the now landmark Fitrakis versus Houston lawsuit, and Frank Carmacho in Arizona with the Democratic Party. Frank, we're going to let you go in a minute or two, but I want to talk to you further about the situation there. We wound up with 500,000 to 600,000.
Frank's off.
Oh, Frank's gone.
No, I'm
okay,
here.
Well, we spent the first half hour. Is he back?
Yeah, I'm here.
Oh, Frank, you are here.
Yeah.
Okay, great. So you are almost to the end of counting these provisional ballots in Arizona. Is that correct?
Right. They should have them done by Wednesday.
And what are you expecting? Are you expecting a change in the outcome of the U.S. senatorial race?
It's still possible, but highly unlikely. There hasn't been that much movement, that much significant movement, enough to have indicated that perhaps Dr. Carmona could have pulled this out. So we think it probably will be within maybe 3 points. He'll get within 3 points, but that'll be about it.
But there was so far at least there is a clear indication that the provisional ballots did tend Democratic. Is that the way to put it?
Oh yeah, the provisionals were breaking our way from the very start.
Can you give us a rough percentage?
Until we get it all sorted out, it probably is going to be about at least 60-40, maybe higher.
Wow. Bob, does that ring true, the provisional ballots here in Ohio? Bob Fitrakis? Oh, Bob is gone. Matt, is Bob not with us now? Bob Fitrakis? Okay, so, Frank, have any of the outcomes in Arizona been affected at all by this swing in provisional ballots?
Oh, yeah. There have been the three congressional races that were really competitive. That's CD1, CD2, and CD9.
Congressional district.
Congressional districts 1, congressional district 2, and congressional district 9 were all nail biters. We had leads in two of the three of them. Actually, I take it back. We only on election night we only led in one of those three. That was Kyrsten Sinema in congressional district 9. She eventually, her lead expanded by several thousand. Ann Kirkpatrick in Congressional District 1 and Ron Barber, the incumbent in Congressional District 2, were behind on election night. They did move up significantly, and they've won their races. The last one was finally called yesterday, Ron Barber winning in Congressional District 2, 10 days after the election, and that's just not acceptable.
All right, so let's get this straight here, because this is a pretty significant deal. You are saying that two seats in the U.S. House of Representatives, correct me if I'm wrong, you're saying that two seats in the U.S. House of Representatives changed hands because of the recounting of the provisional ballot?
Excuse me. The lead, they had the lead on the Republicans were leading on election night. And as the provisionals started coming in and as the votes started getting counted, we overtook the Republicans in both congressional districts 1 and 2.
But that's not been officially certified yet.
Oh, that has been. Well, none of this will be certified, obviously, until it's canvassed and the canvassing should
Rick,
take
I'm
place.
On the radio. Can I call you back after the hour?
But none of it has been official until it's been canvassed, but they've conceded.
They have conceded.
Yeah, the Republicans have conceded in CD1 and CD2. Jonathan Payton in CD1 and Martha McSally in CD2.
Wow.
Yeah.
So that's not like getting much publicity, this official switch from the Republicans to the Democrats. That's two U.S. House seats.
Yeah, one was two of them. Well, one of them was open. CD1 was open. That's a new district. That was open. Since redistricting, it changed slightly, and the incumbent in that district moved to another district and ran from in another district. So we had two new faces there. Then in CD2, Ron Barber won in a special election several months ago to fulfill the term of Gabby Giffords. And then CD9 was the new one that was in mostly metropolitan Phoenix, and that's the one that Kirsten Sinema won. So Democrats now.
Kirsten Sinema, she is. What is her background? Where did she come from? I got some email from Kirsten Sinema.
Yeah, Kirsten is a. She was a state lawmaker. She was originally, when she got involved in politics, she was a member of the Green Party. She is a progressive. She served several terms in the state house, one term in the Senate, before resigning to run for the Congress successfully. She's a very, very bright young woman, very hard worker, very tenacious. She is has tempered her views. She's grown considerably, but yet she still is a very staunch Democrat, very good Democrat.
So, what is the net change in the congressional district, congressional representation from Arizona as a result of this?
Yeah, for the second time in the past, 10 years, we now have a majority Democrat. It's a 5-4 majority. We gained an extra seat, and we went from being 5-3 Republican to 5-4 Democrat. So it's interesting.
Did you pick up a House seat because of?
Yeah, we did. We picked up a House seat because of redistricting, and then we gained the new seat in CD9, and then two more seats in Congressional District 1 and 2.
But the Senate seat now, you have a Democratic senator, U.S. senator.
No, we don't.
They're both Republicans.
They're both Republican. Yeah, Jeff Flake was a congressman who ran for Senate after John Kyle resigned, and unfortunately he defeated Dr. Rich Carmona.
But you did pick up some 20,000 votes. Is that correct so far?
Oh yeah. It's been. It has been what really happened and why it the Carmona campaign is a success, we think, is because for the first time Republicans had to take the National Republican Senatorial Campaign Committee and the RNC had to shift resources to Arizona to help Jeff Flake. They thought that was going to be no problem, no brainer, and it turned out that Dr. Carmona gave him a heck of a fight, and they had to divert resources from other states, and we feel that that probably did have an impact elsewhere around the country and helped with the Democrats getting a where are we now 55-45. Advantage.
All right. So now we have a very important person on the line, Mimi Kennedy. Mimi, are you with us?
Hi.
Mimi Kennedy, great to have you on the show. And Bob Petrakis, are you still with us? I think Bob had phone problems. Mimi Kennedy calling us from California, I assume. Mimi, we've been talking to Richard Camacho in Arizona, and he has informed us that because of the recount of the provisional ballots here, or the first count, actually, of the provisional ballots in Arizona, that the Democratic Party has picked up 2 congressional seats. Have you followed this at all? Mimi is, by the way, let me introduce you to our listeners and to our speaker here from Arizona. Mimi is one of the foremost election protection activists in America and a really hardworking, deeply dedicated activist, as well as being a great activist.
I'm on the radio.
What is your take on what has happened in California on provisional ballots and other irregularities with the vote count? I know there's been a lot of controversy in California as well as in Ohio and Arizona.
I'm doing one now.
Yeah, I'm hearing another thing on the background.
Bob Petrakis, are you with us? You back with us?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, so we are joined by Mimi Kennedy, and we've been told, I think you were off, that two I mean, this is a really staggering deal, actually, because of the provisional ballots that were not counted on Election Day in Arizona and have now been counted at the insistence of the Democratic Party. Two congressional seats have been picked up by the Democrats.
It looks like the same thing has happened. Do you remember the Brian Bilbray, Francine Busby election in San Diego in 06 when there were sleepovers on those machines and there were 10,000 absentee ballots that came in at the last weekend, and Brian Bilbray was declared the winner and inducted into the House by Dennis Hastert before something like 76,000 votes were counted, way past the margin. Anyway, Brian Bilbray has lost his seat, his congressional seat down in San Diego County, and I think those are late results. So presumably it's some provisionals and certainly some of the absentee count. I know that Prop 37, which is the genetic modified organisms, the GMOs, we want them labeled in our food. And there was a vast amount of money poured in by special interests, including supermarkets and oil, the usual suspects. That may win. And the reason that the provisional votes were so high.
Wait, I want to stop you. That's monumental. You're saying that that we believe that the GMO thing might now pass?
I think it might, but I was just trying to check the latest results. I know that in L.A., there is, at one point there were, I think, 700,000 provisional, with some huge amount of provisional votes, and in my precinct, where we had 539 what we would call regular ballots, we had 81 provisional voters. Almost all of them had been changed to vote-by-mail status unwittingly. In other words, an overeager get-out-the-vote canvasser had come and said, hey, get a mail ballot, it's the easy way to vote. And a first-time voter went, yeah, that'd be easy, thinking either-or. Then they go, hey, I'm not working. My schedule allows me on election day to go to the polls. They show up without their vote by mail ballot in hand. They didn't notice it coming. They just didn't pay attention. And they can't vote a regular ballot without turning in that unvoted mail ballot. It's California election code with the reasonable precaution that someone doesn't come and vote at the polls without having also, without showing that they haven't used the vote by mail ballot that they presumably requested, but we're finding they didn't request it consciously. They didn't know they requested it. They're not looking for it in the mail. Anyway, they have to vote provisionally at the polls. This happened humongously to newly registered younger voters, and they vote more progressively naturally. And with these enormous numbers in L.A. County alone, of these provisional votes, I was down there at the registrars to see them being processed and counted. There needs to be signature match to the voter on the registration card, and it's a pretty amazing process. They have 1,000, I think, sort of temporary employees. Of course, you briefly worry about that. Who are these people? But they're overseen. They're down there. You can go and look.
313.
And they're counting these ballots. Are you there, Harvey?
Yes, I am. So what we have here is an astonishing situation. And Frank, I hope you're listening in Arizona, Bob, and here in Ohio, where significant election outcomes are being affected by the finally the election protection movement having enough strength in Arizona with the Democratic Party finally to force recounts on these provisional ballots. Am I reading that? Mimi, in California, are there other races, other outcomes that have been affected?
Well,
I think
Brian Bilbray's loss of his Republican congressional seat down in San Diego was just announced in the paper about 2 days ago. So that's a late result. In other words, he just conceded. That has to be later. I think that must be provisionals. Another, Dan Lundgren, who's been a burr on the butt of the electorate for a while, just a very entrenched Republican, an old white right-wing Republican in California, and he has lost his seat to a challenger, and that was, again, another late result, and there's a third one I can't think of right now. But yes, I do believe these are what you might say in general are delayed ballots.
Wow. Bob Petraeus here in Ohio. Have we had any races changed by the forcing of the actual recount, accounting? We can't even call it recounts. They're counting time of provisional ballots?
No, there's two toss-ups, but those are both state races.
They are significant, right?
Yeah, only in the Republican redistricting has been so severe. Not all that significant in terms of power. I was Arizona has more Democrats in Congress than Ohio. We even though the state is split down the middle, right? We only have we have 12 Republican congressmen and 4 Democrats. They dense packed all the districts, so the state would not be split as the people vote.
And of course, just as a little anecdote or addendum to that. The Republican Secretary of State of Ohio, John Houston, who Bob Petraeus has sued, has suggested that in the Electoral College in the next election, what should happen is that the Electoral College votes should be apportioned along the lines of the congressional districts. So even though Ohio went clearly for Obama, had the vote been counted that way here in Ohio this time, Mitt Romney, whose name I will gratefully forget very soon, would have gotten a majority of the electoral votes in Ohio. Isn't that correct, Bob?
He would have gotten 12, and Obama would have gotten 6.
I must say that I'm so suspicious. When I heard that from Hussman, what's his? Anyway, it's because it's probably so much easier to manipulate an election still on the congressional level, on something smaller than a statewide basis. I know by getting into the weeds in California, I'm so grateful for the retention of our paper ballot. That was Deborah Bowen, our Secretary of State. And the redistricting that was done here by a commission, Democrats did not support that redistricting. A lot of not declined to state friends of mine did. And I did think all along that California had become so much more progressive in the Inland Empire, in Riverside County, San Bernardino County, places that have been written off to the old school Republican Party of California, especially with Arnold Schwarzenegger's victory and the recall of Gray Davis, which was done on manipulable voting machines before people were awake. But I have always thought that those places would be progressive, and those voters do vote more progressively. They are independent, decline to state, so to speak, and so you can't measure them in the old party machine way. Oh, we're going to take this place. But the redistricting that happened from an independent commission turned out to be very good for the Democratic Party, which ironically had opposed it, the party machine. So, Bob, your redistricting, of course, was done by the Republican legislature.
Absolutely. Here in Ohio has been catastrophic. For the Democratic Party, which has not stood up to it, essentially.
Not stood up to it. The Black Caucus traded off Kucinich's seat for a sure new seat in the Columbus area.
For which Bob Petraeus was the Green Party candidate and outpolled the Republican in my precinct. Frank Carmacho, I hope that the Democratic Party will learn from this that we can't let these provisional ballots go by the board. And I'm concerned in Arizona about electronic voting. What kind of percentage of your votes in Arizona were counted on electronic machines?
Oh, wow. All of them. That's the way we count them.
All?
Yeah, all
except
of them.
The
everything is either
except
off the
for
stand
the provisional,
or touchscreen, right?
Yeah. I'm sorry?
Isn't everything in the nation just about, except for New Hampshire, to
I believe so, yeah. Yeah.
Or electronically touchscreen?
It was electronic, except obviously for the provisionals, which, were checked and double-checked.
Greatly ironic is, although, we have reported significant, and I'm sure this is true in California, too, in some cases, Mimi, you can correct me if I'm wrong, that people of color who turn up and are given provisional ballots, there's, a very high likelihood that those provisionals will be pitched in the trash. On the other hand, since they are on paper, You know, they are at least tangible, and all us white people who vote on electronic voting machines without incident, we don't know what happens to our vote. Exactly.
But one thing I'm interested in hearing you say, Harvey, is that, or imply, is that provisional votes are absolutely not counted. I mean, one thing I'm grateful for in California, they go into a pink envelope and they drop into the locked ballot. They go into another with the absentee ballots. But we have always heard that they are counted once the signature is approved. And that's the only thing they look at, and they make sure that no other vote came in for that voter who has an identifying identification number. And then the ballot is separated from that envelope, so it becomes a fungible, anonymous ballot. But I've seen this process, and they will not, of course, count that ballot on the down ticket races that might have been available to vote on in the precinct where that voter showed up and had to vote provisionally, because perhaps that voter didn't belong in that precinct and shouldn't be voting for that congressman or that state legislator. They should be from somewhere else. But all of the statewide races and measures and the presidential votes will be counted on that provisional vote. It's kind of rare. And this year we're going to ask for the percentage of provisional votes that were not counted, and we're going to look into the reasons why they weren't counted. That's been a very muddy area for a long time, and with these high numbers of election-changing votes, we have to find out what those numbers are. But the upsetting thing is that they were so large, the provisional votes, simply because voter education hadn't been done. Voters didn't know anything about mail voting, and the parties are promoting it. Isn't it wonderful? Vote by mail. And yet nowhere on that envelope and nowhere in the pamphlet did it say there's a surrender rule. You've got to bring this into the polls if you decide to vote at the polls instead. Nowhere, nowhere was it seen. The poll workers knew it because we're taught it in training. Voters not taught it at all. Nobody seems to think it's much of a problem.
We did, though. I have to interject here. In Arizona, that was one of the things that, especially on the Get Out the Vote effort and on the Pebble, we did try to educate our voters and go out and knock on doors and explain to them that they had to get them in before, what the deadlines were. And if you didn't meet the deadline to mail it, that you had to take it down to the poll and hand deliver it.
So we did try this. What was the situation here in Ohio?
Well, we have a surrender rule also, but one thing that wasn't mentioned, as people here were being forced to vote provisionally because poll workers were untrained and not checking the late registration addendum, they were forced to go and vote and were given blue pens on the provisionals, and they required black pens. So essentially, in fact, they called the cops on me. I was supposed to be an observer, but I did shout loudly, "You're stealing those people's votes," which got me. The cops called on me, but they did actually go to the black pens provided by the Board of Elections that were sitting there.
Well, unfortunately, we have the great Pete Seeger. Mimi, I hope you'll be with us next week to do a full show on this. Bob Patrakis, thank you for being with us. Frank,
all right, glad to be here.
Arizona. I believe we can now safely say that the election protection movement in this country has changed 4 congressional seats.
Solotopia, Solotopia, Solotopia.